most important words in the English language these days are the subject line that you put in your email. And if you can have a subject line that gets people to open the email, and if you can have an enticing couple of paragraphs in your email that direct people to a website, most people will not go to that website. But of the people that are going, they have given their consent and broadened it a few times in just a few instants. First, they responded positively to your subject line and opened the email. Secondly, they read the email and they responded positively by going to the site. So the momentum has started with those people. And that's the way these days to break through the clutter. Don't try to do it all at once. Attempt to do it a step at a time.
Great advice. Now that story, that's a blueprint that anyone can take that idea and model it for their business or service. Where can someone find a laundry list of these ideas? Are they on your site of actual case studies that your guerrilla students have had successful ventures with these ideas?
They're happening on a daily basis at our GuerrillaMarketingAssociation.com site. Our GuerrillaMarketingAssociation.com site has a live forum board where people ask questions about what they should do launching their business, ask us to check their website. We give them opinions, they respond, and then they tell us how they're doing. So we get to see before our very eyes people spring from an idea to a success. And they chronicle that. And, of course, we have the case histories because all the forum boards since we started are available for everybody to read. Plus, we have stories, 30 new ones every month, and videos with 5 experts about these small business success stories. A lot of them are chronicled in my book, Guerrilla Marketing, 3rd edition. That's the biggest seller. A lot of them are in the new book, Guerrilla Marketing for Free. But these are stories in which your people can participate if they join the Guerrilla Marketing Association. And we do that because we love to see success unfurl before our very eyes without even having to wait for these case histories to take place. We see them happening from week to week right in front of us. We hear them happening on the phone every Wednesday evening. And we see people's fear turn into a bit of information, and that turns into excitement, and that turns into passion for what they're doing. And then we hear the sound of their voice when they report on the successes that they had. They also report on the failures they had, and we guide them on ways to avoid those failures. You see, a book can't do that, but the interactive nature of our GuerrillaMarketingAssociation.com, that's what it's all about. It's about nudging people and helping them and being there for them 24/7, and I mean that 24/7. And I find when they post a question, sometimes I think, this is a question that's over my head. When one of our coaches answers it, and then another coach amplifies it, then two more coaches add something else, and the person who asked the question has a treasury of good answers, because our coaches are authors or professors or ex-Fortune 500 presidents. They're entrepreneurs who have succeeded, and they want to share what they've done with the association.
So let's talk about your coaches, because, you know, there's a lot of people who promote coaching programs, and you end up getting some high school kid on the phone who's reading scripts. Can you tell us the qualifications that you apply before anyone becomes a coach to give the public advice on guerrilla marketing?
Well, we make it tough, Michael. People go to gmarketingcoach.com. They'll see we have a very in-place, serious coaching program that takes 12 weeks long and is very interactive. It takes place online and by telephone. And it's not a matter of us talking and the coaches listening. It's a matter of us talking and the coaches doing. And they turn in written exercises and they prove that they have learned each step along the way during the 12 weeks of training. And when they have completed all that coursework and those phone calls, they are ready to coach people. And a lot of them have turned their coaching certification certificate into a good business for themselves, because no longer are they just another business coach. They're a certified guerrilla marketing coach, and people could read what they've been through just by going to that gmarketingcoach.com site. So it's a tough thing. And then to some people who have taken that coaching, if they want to train with me one-on-one in my office here in Northern California, we offer master training, which is 5 days of training where they hear all the details of guerrilla marketing. But first, we have to make sure a person is a certified coach before we do that.
So people pay to go through the coaching program, and then once they're a certified coach, almost like a consultant, they can go out and generate their own business, or do you help them provide them leads from some of the people inquiring about coaching?
All of the above, Michael. They're on their own to do whatever they want. If they want leads from us, whether it's for clients or for speaking, we give them all the leads they need. We give them all the opportunities they need.
Give me the website again if anyone wants to check that out.
It's gmarketingcoach.com.
Okay, great. Here's another question from Tom Cohn of Yorkshire, England. Often I have ideas and insights that have been overlooked by big companies. How should I approach them so that we can both benefit them by using the idea and me getting paid for it? My concern is that if I present the idea, they can thank me kindly and say they were working on it anyway.
That will probably happen, and if everybody who had a good idea waited to do it by the numbers, we'd be a very faltering society. You're going to have to realize that almost anybody who sees your idea will rip you off, but you've got to proceed ahead with it anyhow, because people really aren't interested in copying your idea or taking credit for what you've done. You've got to just operate on faith that if the world needs your idea, they will adopt it. And yes, it's true that companies may take it away from you, but far more companies are honest and will not take it away from you. Companies' greatest fear these days is of being sued for a new idea that they've inaugurated because they think they came up with it themselves, but somebody will say, well, I worked for you 18 years ago and I gave you that idea, and then they sue the company for $11 million. Companies are terrified of things like that happening, so my advice is don't worry about being stolen. Instead, just try to breathe life into your idea. That's a hard enough thing on its own, and just don't worry about being stolen or copied.
Here's a question from Mark Adornetto, Elk Grove, California. I'm getting plenty of traffic to my website, but the conversion is minimal. What must I do to improve the conversion of visits to sales?
Mark, you've got to do what the internet is best at. That means it enables you to test. You can test offers, you can test freebies that you're giving away. Already you've started the test, you know you're not converting much. That's good. It means you've started your test. Now what you've got to do is start tweaking it. It's not going to be one eureka moment or an epiphany that's going to happen. Instead, you're going to start making little tweaks here and there, and you'll find out by changing one word or changing the color of a type or making it higher on the page or by offering a free report or having a newsletter or something, you can make little tweaks that will make incremental increases in your conversion rate. And you should constantly be testing until you've tweaked it up to a point that now you can feel you're getting a healthy and responsive rate. It's all a matter of testing, and it used to be expensive to test. Mark, it isn't expensive anymore. You know that. The cost of changing the offer or the text on a page, or maybe the people you're attracting are wrong, because the equation really is 80% on the people and 10% on the offer and 10% on the creative approach that you're using. So you've got to be sure you're attracting the right kind of people in the first place. As Michael said at the very beginning of this conversation, go where the needs are and then start filling those needs. Maybe what you're offering on your page is not filling needs. Look at it from the standpoint not of yourself, but of the people who visit you. What do they need? And are you offering that? And if you're not, then look again to try to fulfill needs.
Okay, great. Thank you. From Fritz Thorpe of Cincinnati, Ohio, are postcard packs a good way to reach the affluent household? Is there a better way? What is the future of postcard packs?
Postcard packs are a wonderful way to reach affluent people and medium people. They have very high response rates. In the year 2000, 85% of people who tried postcard packs repeated. And they repeated it because it worked well for them. And if you want to get a double the response rate from your postcard pack, tell the publisher you would like your postcard to be put on top of the pack. And since nobody else asks for that, you're going to get a very high response rate. And then ask the next time, say, hey, you put my postcard on the top last time. The response rate was so good, please do it again. I think the future of postcard packs is very bright and glowing, especially as the world becomes more tired of getting junk email and certainly junk faxes. Junk mail is coming back. Direct mail is going to be stronger, and the strongest form of direct mail is postcards. And the most inexpensive way of doing postcard marketing is postcard packs. They're wonderful ways for you to really keep the cost down, reach a targeted market, and say the right things to the right people. I could even give you an 800 phone number for the best postcard pack place in the United States.
Go ahead.
But from independent investigation, I hear this is where it's happening. Just get their free brochure, Mark, and you'll find out what I'm talking about. 800-323-2751. 800-323-2751. 800-321-5151. That number is going to work stateside locations that Michael has mentioned so far. 800-323-2751. And then say, please send me your free brochure. And then you'll realize that you really can get high response rate from a postcard in a postcard pack.
Here's another question from Bob. My question would be for Jay. All of your years in marketing, what is the one marketing strategy you used that paid the greatest dividends?
I was here when this happened, and this is what I learned that paid the greatest dividends by far. I was working at an advertising agency in Chicago. We were called into a cigarette company in New York. We were called in because they had a brand that was in 31st place, not a very good ranking, and it was perceived of as a feminine cigarette. And although it was true that in those days more women smoked than men, men smoked more cigarettes. And they wanted us to change the perception of the brand so that it would be perceived as a more masculine brand. Can you do that, they asked. We said, we'll give it a shot. So we went back to Chicago. We immediately sent a couple of photographers and an art director to a friend's ranch in West Texas. And we told them to spend 2 weeks shooting pictures of what goes on in a ranch. We said, shoot pictures of cowboys at a real ranch. Don't tell them what you're doing. Make these unposed pictures. We said, don't have any cows in the pictures. Just men and horses. Don't have any women in the pictures. Just men, horses, and beautiful scenery. Well, they did that. We invented a fictional place. We called it Marlboro Country. We came up with a theme line, which was come to where the flavor is. Come to Marlboro Country. And in those days, because it was legal to hawk cancer on radio and television, we rented the music to the Magnificent Seven, $50,000 a year. We presented the Marlboro campaign to the Marlboro brand group in New York. They loved it. They agreed to invest $18 million in it the first year. Once they saw those gorgeous photographs of real cowboys, and it said, come to where the flavor is, come to Marlboro Country, that really hit the nail on the head for the Marlboro brand group. So Marlboro was on radio, television, magazines, newspapers, billboards, all over the country. And he became a cultural icon in the course of a year. We went back to Philip Morris, the parent company of Marlboro, to get our high fives and our compliments and our bonuses. We found out that this brand that had been the 31st largest selling cigarette in the country was now ranked 31. And focus group interviews in 10 cities showed us that this brand that had been perceived of as a feminine brand was still perceived of as a feminine brand.
Even with the cowboys?
Even though we had a year's worth of showing these macho cowboys doing what cowboys really do on a real ranch, unposed pictures. And so now we switch to February of the year 2004, and we see that Marlboro is the number one selling cigarette in America. It's number one to men. It's number one to women. It's the number one selling cigarette in the world. In fact, one out of every five cigarettes sold in the world is a Marlboro. But here's the shocker. Absolutely nothing has changed in the marketing. It's still cowboys. It's still the Marlboro man. It's still come to where the flavor is. There's no more radio or television, but it's the same of designs and layouts and signs and billboards and same models, except for some of those poor guys who did die of lung cancer. So it shows us what makes marketing work. And what makes marketing work is amazing. There's a one-word answer to the biggest insight I had on marketing. Anybody who really has made a fortune in marketing gets this insight eventually. That one-word answer to what makes marketing work is commitment. And the hero of the Marlboro, which is known as the best marketing brand in history, it's not the guys who came up with the words or the idea of even cowboys or even the people who came up with the visuals. It's the chairman of the board of Philip Morris who didn't fire us or toss us out the window when he invested $18 million of his dollars and his brand didn't budge.
How long had it been going for a year?
1 year, and it still stayed 31st. About 2 years for it to start moving, and it moved skyward, upward, ever since. And when they cut it off radio, television, it still continued moving upward because of the commitment that the brand showed to the cowboys and to that brand. And I learned, oh my God, it's not a magic moment or a magic formula. It's having commitment. It's what makes marriage work. It's what makes a business work. It's what makes a person run a sub-4-hour marathon. It's what makes people succeed in anything. It's commitment to their cause. And that's the insight I learned. I learned it a very expensive way. Most people don't have $18 million to hang around and say, well, when we expect it to be really hit over the head by Joe Coleman IV, the chairman of the board of Philip Morris, he said, well, you fellas told me this was going to take commitment. He says, and I'm willing to hang in there. And Leo Burnett was there in the room. And Leo Burnett, who understands a thing or two about marketing, he expected us to be fired as well. But he also had said ahead of time, this is going to take a while. People do not want to separate from their brands in a hurry.
Right.
People want to hang on to them for a while. So, well, commitment was the insight that I learned.
Do you remember that day when you guys were all in there who came up with the idea and talking about it and putting it together?
The person's name was Tom Laughlin. He's from Park Forest, Illinois. He's the person who had the idea of cowboys. He's the idea of calling it Marlboro Country. I was the one who had the idea of renting the music to the Magnificent Seven. Other people, Bob Edens, contributed to the creative flow and force of that idea. Notice Leo Burnett, whose name is on the door, he didn't come up with any of the words, but he created the atmosphere where we could come up with something like Marlboro Country. It was a team effort.
What a great story. What a great story. Thank you.
What a great insight. Taught me the meaning of commitment loud and clear, up front, personal, and in real life.
Yes, you know, you got, they could have quit too soon, and just around the corner they would have been there.
Everybody does, Michael. 90% of marketing campaigns that fail aren't because people had the wrong plan. It's because they abandoned it too soon. They thought it would happen faster than it really happens, and it doesn't happen in a hurry.
We're talking more image-type advertising, and then a lot of the visitors to my site are direct marketing savvy. So there is a difference. Let's say you had that sales letter that you wrote for that first book, and you sent it out to 10,000 people. If no one responded, you could send that thing a third and fourth and fifth and sixth time. For the most part, no one's still going to respond. So we're talking about two different types of advertising?
Well, you've got to know what to commit to. And you're right, in direct marketing, if you don't get a response the first time, you can't hang in there. It's a different thing. That's not a matter of changing somebody's identity and happening slowly over time. But direct marketing, you're measured by the minute. You're measured by the project. You're measured by the mailing. And you can't, there's no room for failure in any of those.
Well, a lot of advertising gets a lot of flack. They call it image advertising.
Yes.
And it's talked as wasteful. I'm sure a lot of it is. What are your views on that? If someone saw those Marlboro campaigns at first, it took a year for the impact to show the results, but many people today, if they saw that, they would think, well, you know, what is this? It's image advertising. It's not direct responsive in nature. How can someone differentiate when they're watching advertising to know which ones are image advertising wasteful and which ones which appear to be like that but could be successful and big hits?
It's really a combination that you need, Michael. You need a combination of some identity ads telling people who you are and why you're good. At the same time, you've got to be making special offers to them. And if you don't have that identity advertising, we don't use the word image advertising because an image is a phony thing defined in the dictionary as a facade.
Mm-hmm.
But identity stems from your true personality. Every brand, every product, every service has a personality, whether you know it or not. And if you communicate the kind of personality you want people to know about, and at the same time, if you're making special offers to them, then you're going to be doing both things at the same time. Gaining a share of mind, which should come before you gain a share of market. If people get a direct mail letter from you and they've never heard of your company, they're going to respond differently than if they get a direct mail letter from you, but they've heard about your company, they've read an ad or seen a commercial. Now they know more about you. They may want to learn even more. So you're going to get a higher response rate to that offer.
Okay, I've got 10 more descriptive words, the 10 last ones. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, quiet. We've purposely left off the last 10 answers to Jay's personality profile. You may see the results of Jay's personality profile by going below and entering your name and your email address. You'll be taken to an area where you can take your own personality test, and after you've taken your personality test and sent it in, we will send you the username and password to access Jay's true guerrilla marketing personality profile. Here's a question from Gary Wynn of Arlington, Virginia. It's been taught that giving something away for free is a good way to generate leads. Since so many people are giving away free ebooks and products online, it's becoming harder and harder to even use free stuff as a lead generator. How do you generate leads in spite of this setback?
By offering something for free that's different from anything else that's being offered for free. People love free things. The problem is with everybody and their cousin giving away free things, it's hard to not duplicate the offerings of others. So you've got to have more creativity in what you give away for free than ever before. And if you're creative in what you give away for free, the concept of free will always still help you get attention and become a great lead generator. But more creativity is demanded than ever before. One of the ways that creativity is being demonstrated is giving away free things that can be photographed and showing a person a picture of what it is that you're offering for free rather than just the words. Some things photographed in a way that they look more enticing, and some very sophisticated marketing people are now selecting the freebies that they're going to give away based on how photogenic they are rather than just on the thing itself. I know a business that became the second largest fundraising business in the United States by taking photographs of $1.19 gifts and putting them on postcards and then sending them to the powers at major schools and saying, we will give you a free pen clock or a new quartz calculator if you just don't respond to this postcard. And by showing photographs of these things, the response rates went way, way, way up. So it's a matter of exercising creativity and selecting what you get for free and in presenting it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Here's a question for me. Why the name Guerrilla Marketing? Where did the name Guerrilla come from?
I had written a book which had 521 ways for people to market in a low-cost method. At the same time, a man was being interviewed in the San Francisco Chronicle. His name is Blair Newman, and he was a boyhood friend of Bill Gates. And Blair said that the economy was so tough that these days companies are going to need to use guerrilla marketing. And I thought, God, that's a great title for the book I just wrote.
That's great.
And so I used that phrase. He called me 5 years later, and he said, are you the guy who wrote guerrilla marketing? And I said, yes. He said, who do you give credit for coming up with that title? I said, I give Blair Newman credit. He said, well, this is Blair Newman. Thank you, Blair. I said, I'd never take credit because you're the guy who coined the term as far as I'm concerned. He said, well, that's all I cared about, Jay. I just wanted to know if you were taking credit or giving credit where it's due.
That's great. You played it straight.
Yes.
Okay, here's a question by Tim Boast from Sarasota, Florida. It has been demonstrated again and again that long copy sells with direct mail and print advertising. What have you learned about the transferability of long copy concept to the Internet? With the tendency of the web to be such a highly visual medium, and with attention spans increasingly shorter and the tendency to surf through to other web locations so compelling, does long copy have a place on the web? If so, what's the best way to structure and present it in order to gain maximum effectiveness?
I have an answer for you, Tim. The idea is take your long copy and first serve it up as short copy. Make as concise a digest of it as possible. If that short copy is enticing enough, it'll get people to want to read your long copy. Then your long copy will be much easier to take if you have a lot of subheads and if you have short paragraphs. Studies show, and this is true also of Internet word count, that copy of a long copy message, that readership falls off dramatically after 50 words. But between 50 words and 1,000 words, there's hardly any drop-off at all. The people who don't care will weed themselves out. The people who do care will want to learn everything they can, although you would think that the tendency is toward shorter copy. I think the reverse is true. It's very short copy emails that send people to quite long copy websites where people get to get all the information they need. The idea is not to think in terms of long or short copy, but how much information must I put forth to let a person make an intelligent purchase decision? And sometimes that's quite a bit of copy. Never be self-conscious as to how long your copy is, because the people who are your hottest prospects are praying you'll tell them everything. They don't want you to hold back, and they don't want you to fall prey to the idea of white space or short copy. They want information. They're about to spend a lot of their money, and they need information to avoid making a mistake. Don't be self-conscious. Realize the people who don't care weed themselves out. The people who do care love you for everything you're going to say.
Great, thank you. Here's from Henry Schoffler of Washington, D.C. How do you think guerrilla marketing principles change or should be adapted when applied to Internet marketing? Will you be writing some form of guerrilla marketing for the Internet book soon?
Well, we've written three books, one called Guerrilla Marketing Online, another called Guerrilla Marketing Online Second Edition, and another one called Guerrilla Marketing Online Weapons. So So we started writing guerrilla marketing books and applying it on the internet a long time ago. I wrote Guerrilla Marketing with Technology. Also talked about how to behave yourself online. But because we're learning so much about online marketing, we get to put the new things into our Guerrilla Marketing Insider, our monthly publication. For example, we now know the best day of the week to mail emails for making money, not for getting responses or not for getting people to download your offering, but for making money. Friday is the best day. Well, we learned that through a lot of testing.
How much better than the other days?
Please go to part 4.